The Lord be with you.
And with
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. At that time, Jesus exclaimed, "I give you praise, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, you have revealed them to the little ones. Yes, Father, such has been your gracious will. All things have been handed over to me by the Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone whom the Son wishes to reveal him. Come to me, all who are labored and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest in yourselves. For my yoke is easy and my burden light." The Gospel of the Lord.
So the fundamental paradox of the Christian life is one involved of being obedient, and through obedience being free. Those of us who have lived through the late 60s, a few of us here, might remember that don't trust anyone over 30. I would like to suggest to you that wisdom among young people is treasuring a tradition. Wisdom among old people is being open to change. And in both instances, the challenge is to figure out when it is that we should be obedient, and when it is that that obedience is really the trick to freedom. So the stories in the Gospel and the first reading help us somewhat. What I'd like to do is take a look at those readings, point out a few things, and then ask how easily this Gospel can be misunderstood, and then maybe suggest some ways to understand it. I don't think I have it down by any means. When I get older, I'm always struck by how dumb I can be about some things and only discover it now. I say, my goodness, what else have I missed? So the first reading is typically one that's used on Palm Sunday. Remember Palm Sunday? Jesus rides in on an ass, rides in on a donkey, and the people of Jerusalem welcome him. And this is the text, and it's all about joy. "Rejoice, O daughter. Shout for joy. The king is coming." What's he doing? He's riding on an ass. That's not good. That's not fit for a king. For a king, you want something like Air Force One. I mean, something really elegant. And what does he say? He says here, he's going to banish the chariot, the horse, and the warrior's bow. He's going to banish, these were the instruments of war of the day. This person is going to be not a warrior king, this person is going to be the Prince of Peace. That's why there should be rejoicing. And if you go to the Gospel, never overlook various things at the beginning. It says, at that time, Jesus exclaimed. What time? What had just gone on? Now, I know, being deeply informed Catholics of Holy Family Parish, you not only read the readings beforehand, but you read their overall context, right? Right. So if you look at this beforehand, there's this incredible, it's kind of funny, but it's tragic, a passage where Jesus says, you know, John the Baptist comes and they say he's too austere, all this. I come along and you say you eat and you drink and you do all that stuff with sinners. So both are rejected, which is to say people find grounds to reject people they don't like. You know, haven't you had the experience? I just don't like this person. So as a consequence, nothing they can say is good. Nothing. I'm not getting into politics. I could see this in your eyes. So at that time, that means the previous passages talk about the rejection, that people are not listening to Jesus. They don't want to see him. And what does he say? I give praise to you, Father, Lord of heaven, for although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned. Who are the wise and learned? Some of the people that were rejecting Jesus at the time were the scribes. The scribes were, you've heard the phrase lawyers. I'm not going to dump on lawyers. But lawyers is not really accurate. It would be more accurate to say the scribes were theologians. Oh, I don't want to dump on them. Theologians who studied the law, and the law was the religious law for the way of life. So it's better to understand the scribes as very learned theologians. And the point Jesus is making is your learning can get in the way of understanding. Now, that's not that hard to grasp, is it? Your learning. You know, there are people that take great pride in how much they know. And they find various ways of letting you know that. My mother and father never went to college. My father didn't go past the eighth grade. He had to run the farm. But both of them had BS detectors that were just unerring. They were smart people, very smart. And a lot smarter than some PhDs that I've met. So the learned and the clever, that's no key to the kingdom, all right? And it goes on, it says here, towards the end, all you who labor and are burdened, I will give you rest. And he refers to my yoke. A couple things about a yoke. A yoke, one of my uncles, my mother's brother, many of them had farms, but I had a farm. As a child, I used to remember they had two horses. They called them Kate and Bob. Bob had an attitude. Bob was bigger than Kate, but he would harness them both, and what they called horse collars, at least what we called them in those days, it was very clear that Bob's horse collar for pulling had to be bigger than Kate's, and if you got them mixed up, you almost strangled Bob. So there was a sense in which they were tailor-made. I have read commentaries that say in the time of Jesus, when they had oxen pulling plows and whatever, they had to tailor-make the yoke. Guy bought an ox, then he went and got a yoke. He didn't have a yoke first. And there is a legend, it's kind of cute, we have no idea if it's true, but it's a neat legend, that Jesus was such a craftsman that he used to make perfect yokes. And everybody would come and say, please, make a yoke for my oxen so that they can do what they need to do freely. It's only a legend, but I like it. I like it. It gives an idea of Jesus saying, why can I tell you that my yoke is easy and my burden is light? Because it fits you. It's made for you. Another image in the Old Testament, and the rabbis used to talk about the yoke is wisdom. It's wisdom. And what wisdom is about is you can put things in perspective. That often comes with age. Not always. There are old fools. But wisdom can come with age, where you put things, you don't get blown away. You can spot what's really important, and the other stuff you can let drip. So, what are the ways this can be misunderstood? My yoke is easy, my burden is light. One of the first ones is, it says, come away and rest yourselves. Retire early. Is that the meaning? Withdraw. I don't know how many of you have heard of a book that's recently getting a lot of buzz. You won't see it in the LA Times book section. I keep looking in vain for any review of any book on religion in the LA Times, and I never see it. But this is called The Benedict Option. Anybody? The Benedict Option, written by Rod Dreher. The idea of the Benedict, Saint Benedict, pull back into a monastery. The world, our culture, is going to hell in a handbasket. As far as he's concerned, that decision about homosexual marriage, that's it. It's over. There's nothing you can do. We've lost the culture wars. Batten down the hatches, lift up the drawbridge, and work on personal virtue in small Christian communities. So let's not say that one of the first understandings of this is come a while and rest is not to disappear from the culture. God rested on the seventh day. Even God rested. The world didn't fall apart. I mean, there is a place for relaxation, right? but for 6 days he works. So one of the things, one of the misunderstandings is to withdraw. What's another misunderstanding? Goes to the first reading. Too many of the Jews thought of Jesus as a warrior king. I mean, they were under oppression, the Roman oppression. So you'd think about that. And they would identify him with King David, who was a great warrior. They would link him with that. But that's not who he was. Jesus is meek and humble of heart, it says in the gospel. This is not your A-type male, alpha male. This is someone who had a kind of tenderness, and in that tenderness, a tremendous strength. So the second misunderstanding is to think of Jesus as some warrior rather than a person of nonviolence. I mean, look at the gospel. Look how often Jesus says things like, turn the other cheek, put your sword back in its sheath. I could call my angels here, but no. This is a very different kind of savior. Third one, I think, is my burden is easy. You could say easy and light. Well, easy and light. Look what happened to Jesus. He was betrayed. He was rejected. He sweat blood in the Garden of Gethsemane. He was crucified like a criminal. What's he talking about? I could end up saying, if this is what you mean by easy and light, you can have it. So then how do you unpack that? And then the last one I've already alluded to, and that is what it all is about is intellectual power. I'm particularly sensitive to this because of my position as a professor and so on. And I never put after my name PhD. I mean, just a quirk I have. I just don't do it. I'll put my religious initials, SM, silly man. No, Society of Mary. I'll do that, but I'm not going to do the other stuff because it's too easy to get caught up in that. Students will ask me, what shall we call you? Doctor, professor, father? I said I can think of a lot of things not to call me. Just call me Father. That's what I am. So there's the paradox. The paradox is the yoke, if we accept it, leads us to great joy. When you look at the life of Jesus, could you conclude that he had a life of great joy? Or would your first instinct to say he was burdened with terrible human nature, dumb apostles that didn't get it, people that betrayed him? Father, let this cup pass from me. My God, why have you forsaken me? You see how you can wrestle with this? I would suggest to you that what's at the heart of this idea could be very useful for us. What Jesus offers is not cheap happiness. What Jesus offers is profound joy. And joy takes place in the midst of suffering. And if it isn't in the midst of suffering, it's a nice period in your life, but it'll probably pass. Someone would say, I'm just Germanic and depressive. That's not true. I love Mediterranean food. But I do think that what's at the heart of this kind of thing is an awareness of the presence and the gift of Jesus. I remember talking to a girl I dated for 3 years. This was before I entered religious life. And she once asked me, why are you thinking about this? And I said to her, I said, look, I like the idea of a community. I like the idea of service. And the third thing I found coming out of my mouth, and I've never forgotten it. Sometimes that happens. Something comes out of your mouth, and you say, oh, my God, did I say that? I said it was the God thing. The God thing. And I remember adding, saying, if it is true what they say, those people that were teaching, she was Catholic, we both went to Catholic schools, what they tell us about God, if it's true, we'd be really foolish not to pay a lot of attention to it. And that God thing is not a thing. I was wrong. The God thing is a person. It's Jesus. If someone asks you later today, how was Mass? Well, it was all right. Sermon was okay. A little long. Whatever. Suppose you were to answer, it was an awesome privilege. Because once again, I encountered Jesus, the living God, who gave himself to me. I encountered Jesus, who is life and love and forgiveness, and he entered into my very heart, and he has lifted me up, and he has taught me not to be afraid, even of the yoke that at times is suffering. Suppose you gave that as your answer. Boy, you'd say, well, can I go with you next Sunday? This is a rich, rich thing. What we're doing here is sacred, and Jesus is at the center of it. Eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor has it entered into the human heart what God prepares for those who love him, which is the gift of Jesus. Amen. I must confess, I was going to pull a little trick on you and talk about suffering and so on, and how life at times can actually throw a curveball at you, but I didn't.